When I first heard Snap Judgment, I was driving my car and I was going to the gym. And I remember hearing Glenn's voice that I pulled over and I listened to the whole episode and I just could not move my car until it was over. And I knew from that day that I needed to work there. This is a storytelling show that doesn't do diversity for diversity's sake. It's a show that lifts up everybody. A couple of years later, when I found the job posting, I didn't think I had a chance. I honestly didn't. And then when I got the call back and I got hired, it was the best day of my life, and it was something that completely changed my life. And Snap does that for people. It changes people's lives. And that's what your money is doing. You're changing lives by supporting Snap.
Wow. If you've ever had a driveway moment listening to Snap Judgment, if you've ever told your girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, mom, dad, preacher, kid about a story you've heard here, make sure you support the show that made that happen. Come on board. Be a snapper. Make this happen the only way it can happen, in a group, in a community. A community make this show happen, and we're asking our community now to support it at snapjudgment.org. It was the background chatter of my early childhood. My parents would say things like, when we get the farm, when we move to the farm, we might need that someday on the farm. And like other things moms and pops say, I don't really pay it to me, never mind. I'm playing with my trucks and riding my bike in Detroit, Michigan. My whole concept of what a farm might be comes from cereal commercials, Looney Tunes cartoons. So you can imagine my surprise and my shock when one day my parents packed my brother and I into a car and drive us over to our farm. And we're looking around like, what? What? And my pops is proud, beaming. That's right, boys. 88 acres. As far as I can see, this is our farm. Just like they said, just like they promised. Well, kinda. I'm not one to contradict my parents with them being the spare the rod, spoil the child type of folk, but this might have been our land. Might have been the bank's land or whoever's land, but like the cartoons had told me, a farm, this was not. Farms need barns and tractors and talking roosters and trucks and such, not just a bunch of Michigan swampland. And maybe it was my expression, but I think he may have sensed my inability to envision the full picture. Don't worry, boys. Don't worry. See, anything worth having is worth working for. And I didn't know it then, but I know now that these words, they were a prediction, a vision, a sentence. Spent battling that swamp, trying to tame it into producing food. Hard work, Lord. The sweat, the heat, the pain, the plow, the rain, the cold. If you see a farmer, Snappers, hug a farmer. Kiss that farmer. But more importantly, kiss that farm boy. Squeeze him in your arms. Let him know you understand, even though you most certainly do not understand. Today on Snap Judgment, from WNYC Studios, we proudly present The Promised Land. Amazing stories from real people tied to real places. My name is Glenn Washington. Always remember, the cartoon version leaves out some very important stuff when you're listening to Snap Judgment. Now then, on today's episode, we're headed into some pretty rough spots with so many good stories. This one starts out in a quiet town in the middle of a winter night during a very big storm. Snap Judgment.
And it was snowing.
It was snowing?
It was snowing.
It's unusual for it to snow at all in the Palestinian town of Beit Sahor. And that night, as two trucks filled with cattle pulled up steep, winding hills through the rain and snow, their wheels began to spin.
The trucks couldn't go up.
It was 8 o'clock and pitch dark when the truck skidded to a full stop. Jalal Khumsia stepped out into the storm, and some 25 boys ran up to the trucks. They had been waiting for Jalal to arrive with the cows all day. As Jalal slowly opened the back gate of the trucks, the cows leapt.
The cows ran away. Almost all of them.
There were 18 of them. Jalal was in charge of getting them to his cousin's teeny plot of land on top of a hill.
So some people tried to catch the cows from their tails. From the tails. It was very funny. Very, very funny, really. Yani, all the time we were sometimes laughing, sometimes weeping. Anyway, it was a mess, a complete mess. Yani, I put my hand on my heart. I was really afraid. We wanted them to be safe, you know, to bring them safe back.
And why was that?
Our aim and our hope and will be collapsed, so it was.
Jalal is saying that the aim and hope of his people rested in the fate of these cows. Teen cows running through the dark, icy streets of a small Palestinian town. 18 cows that sort of became legendary. Beit Sahorians talk about the cows as if they were heroes in a dairy-based revolution. I needed so much more information.
Ita?
Sheena.
Sheena.
Yes.
Sheena.
Yes. That's why I came here, to Beit Sahor. To Jalal's house some 30 years later, to hear the full story.
And that time, I was wearing one like this also.
It's like a canvas long jacket.
We're in the sitting room, decorated with velvet floral upholstery, crystal ashtrays, and framed paintings of the Virgin Mary. Jalal, like most of Beit Sahor, is Christian, which is not what we tend to think about when we think of a Palestinian town. But still, Beit Sahorians, like other Palestinians, live under occupation. Jalal told me that the Cow Project began when many Palestinians were looking for ways to be more independent from Israeli rule.
That was the real beginning of it. It was time where we felt that we have started our battle for our freedom and independence.
It was the mid-80s. Jalal started hearing whispers around Beit Sahor. Palestinian people all over were coming up with plans, creative ways to take the tasks of their daily routines back under their own control, for self-sufficiency. Teachers gathered students in underground classrooms. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians stopped paying taxes. And Jalal helped townspeople plant vegetables in their backyards so they wouldn't have to buy things like cucumbers and eggplants from Israelis. It was the start of the first Palestinian uprising, or Intifada. And this was how Jalal, a middle school teacher, who had never in his life milked a cow, ended up bringing 18 pregnant heifers to Beit Sahor.
Because we didn't want to buy the Israeli milk. The decision was taken as a step forward to the future, to build the Palestinian state.
Overnight, a new kind of excitement spread across town. People gave 10, 15, 50 shekels to Jalal for the cows. Nearly everyone wanted a hand in the project.
Although it's an adventure and it's high risk.
No one, including Jalal, really knew exactly how high risk this would turn out to be for the people of Beit Sahor. At first, they were just excited for the challenge. They didn't even know where to find cows, no less how to milk them. To be clear, this is not a farm town. No one was milking cows in their back barn every morning. This was a town of doctors, lawyers, intellectuals.
It was something for us, it was very strange. We really didn't know exactly what to do.
But Jalal knew Israelis who did. Because at the time, there was no wall separating Palestinians from Israelis. They did business together, had friendships. In fact, Jewish Israelis would come to Beit Sahor by the busload to help Palestinians garden and harvest food. So when Jalal needed help finding cows, he and two other members of his agriculture committee went to their Israeli friend for help. They all went hopping from one Israeli kibbutz to the next, together, buying up cows for their project.
We wanted the cows to be, all of them, pregnant.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the idea, so they can deliver babies, and so the farm will be bigger and bigger.
Once they got the pregnant heifers on the farm, they began to milk them and deliver bottles of fresh, sweet milk to the townspeople.
Every day we're receiving many people from the town coming to see the cows.
Families planned picnics at the farm. Parents lined up their kids for photos with the cows, like they were circus elephants or something.
Everybody was very happy.
Not only were the cows producing milk, but then came even better news.
And the news spread in Beit Sahor like lightning. So many people went there. They wanted to watch the cow delivering the first baby in the farm.
While hundreds of townspeople gathered, Jalal paced back and forth. He didn't talk to anyone. He was focused only on the cow.
Really like a father who is watching his wife delivering their first baby. Exactly like that. It was screaming, there was pain, of course. And when the baby came, you know, like a wedding, you know, like a wedding party became there. Everybody shouting, everybody singing, everybody. And it was a joy, a great joy. We put some blankets on the baby so as to keep it warm. But, you know, and it's very amazing that the baby quickly stood up and started jumping. And these cows became, for the Beit Sahorian people, as heroes.
And a tiny, slimy baby calf became a promise. A promise that the dairy would grow and grow into a shining example of Palestinian self-sufficiency. Palestinian independence. Jalal and the Ag Committee were so committed to the growth of the dairy farm that they sent two boys from Beit Sahor all the way to Indiana to study bovine in vitro fertilization.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know.
Do you know about it? Do you know about the, like, who came to do it and how it worked?
No. No.
You don't know whose idea it was.
Jalal lights a cigarette, and suddenly, He's not smiling anymore.
It's kind of weird to talk about.
Huh?
It's weird to talk about the artificial insemination of cows.
At the time, I thought he was maybe hesitating because I was talking about sex stuff. But then he almost turned on me, like he was mad at me for trying to poke a hole in his legend.
I wanted to ask you something. What exactly, Annie, are you doing?
Or maybe he was cagey because his cow project really did put him and the people of Beit Sahor in danger.
What happens next? What happens next? Find out after you understand that if you want to get behind the snap, find the backstory of snap storytelling, and meet the storytellers themselves, join Snap Nation. SnapJudgment.org. Connect with other snappers worldwide. Get storytelling tips, snap music, ringtones, exclusive content, never before aired stories and performances only available through Snap Nation at SnapJudgment.org. We return to Snap Judgment, the promised land. But Snap Judgment continues in just a moment. Hey, snappers, you know it's not over. It is never over. The story continues in just a moment. I'm here right now with Jasmine Aguilera. Jasmine?
I just want to talk a little bit about how much Snap means to me. It's not just a program. It's so much more than that. It really, really is. The money that you donate isn't just going to a program. It's going to people, to the producers, to the sound engineers, to everybody in our orbit, so that we can create stories of our communities and communities around the world.
And that's why it's so important that we activate our community to support the stories that you love. And you can do it right now at snapjudgment.org.
Keep on snapping with us, and we will keep on bringing you stories that matter, like this one.
Welcome back to Snap Judgment, the promised land, where in a small Palestinian village, the desire for fresh milk has just turned dangerous.
Days after the birth of the first calf, Israeli soldiers showed up at the farm unannounced.
Every cow has, they took a photo for every cow, in addition to photos for the farm and the place. Every cow has the number on the body of the cow.
To be clear, nothing about the dairy farm was illegal, but the idea it represented, the idea of self-reliance, was threatening. When soldiers showed up at the dairy farm, they asked Jalal,
"What are you doing?" "We bought cows and we want to raise the cows. That's it." He said, no. "I am telling you, these cows, that's the exact words, the exact words. These cows are dangerous for the security of the state of Israel." And I was really astonished and said, "What are you saying? These cows are dangerous for the security of the state of Israel? Are you mad?" He said, "I'm giving you a military order for you. You are forbidden to go to that place. And if I know that you went there even for a minute, you will be arrested." He said, "You have 3 days. I'll give you only 3 days. Okay, we met with other people and started discussing the thing, and we decided not to wait for 3 days. We decided to take the cows. We were afraid that this man will do and kill the cows or do something.
Jalal didn't want to go to prison. And he didn't want the Israeli soldiers to slaughter the cows they had worked so hard to get. So that night, Jalal again gathered the young boys of Beit Sahor. This time, he says about 50 showed up.
"We asked the young people, again, we want to take the cows out and you have to help us."
In the middle of the night, Jalal and the boys started walking.
And the cows collaborated, you know. not a single voice, silently.
The cows were walking. The cows didn't make any noise.
They cooperated with us so as not to be discovered.
They went to the butcher's house on a hill on the outskirts of town and asked the butcher and his wife, Virginie, did they have room for 19 cows?
And this is very nice, this cow. Bring in the night, in the fillel, in the night. Bring for me here.
The cows.
The cows, all the cows. In wahda fillel, 12 nus wahda fillel.
1 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. No, we wed the cow to come.
What were you feeling? 1 a.m. You must have been very tired.
No, nothing. I am very happy because I will make milk.
Jalal drew up a quick contract to sell the cows to Virginie and her husband. That way, if the soldiers discovered the cows at their place, Virginie could say she bought the cows for her butchery.
We have a store of meat, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I am very happy.
Yeah.
I am very happy.
Yeah.
Because I help, you know what I mean, for my city.
Yeah.
This is the people of my city and neighbors and, you know, and friends. I am very happy.
And so how many cows did you have at your house?
20 cows. I will go there and...
You would go and fetch.
Yes, they get very good. I love him very much. Come. Where's the cow? Here.
You're showing me where you kept the cow.
Yes, this.
Virginie walks me out to the barn, where she still keeps animals.
The cow.
Sheep, cows to be slaughtered for meat. She's in her 80s now, smoking a cigarette and wearing fuzzy pink PJs with Bugs Bunny embroidered on the shirt. It's 9 in the morning. When we go inside, she puts a plate of chicken livers in front of me and offers me whiskey.
Drink this and eat this.
I decline both.
What's wrong?
So instead, she cuts up a plate of pickles and pours me a full glass of red wine.
This is good.
So before I met you, I met Abu Hanna, your husband, and he said you were stronger than Yasser Arafat.
I'm strong. I don't...
The house is sort of out of the way of the main city, up a hill. I could see how it was the perfect place to hide cows and milk them in secret.
And we...
She's making milking gestures with her hands.
Not difficult. Easy. Never... No. Easy.
The morning after they moved the cows, Israeli soldiers showed up at Jalal's barn again. Of course, it was empty. So they started a full-blown search for the cows.
A searching campaign, you don't believe it. Hundreds of soldiers.
Hundreds of soldiers just
for
the cows?
Two helicopters.
Only for the cows?
Hundreds of soldiers.
Only to look for the cows? There was nothing else?
Looking for the cows and carrying the photos of the cows. Asking people, did you see this cow? Have you ever seen this cow?
When the soldier knocks on the door and says, have you seen this cow? How do people react to that?
Laughing at them. Joking at the soldiers all the time. Anyhow...
Did they ask you? Did they question you about it?
No.
Why not?
Why not? Mm-hmm. They arrested me.
Jalal says he was detained by the Israelis without trial, without an investigation. He was there for 2 months.
And that was during the search campaign for the cows.
Yeah.
Were you worried about the cows?
Yes, of course, all the time.
Did you know what was happening with the cows?
No.
So I asked Virginie, after the soldiers arrested Jalal, Virginie says she milked the cows in peace until one day she was drinking coffee and heard a loud soldiers were outside her house. She's saying they were wearing guns across their shoulders, dressed in military uniforms. The soldiers asked to come inside.
And we come here. Oh, this is the cow. No, this is my cow. What do you want? This is our cow. No, this is my cow. Go.
The soldiers found the 19 cows in Virginie's barn, but the barn was locked. Virginie waved the key to the barn in their faces and then dropped it inside her bra.
I Bob, shut the door and the key and put it here. You can't go to the cow antique. This is mine. This is mine. I love it. This is mine.
How did you feel when you were talking to the Israelis?
No, nothing. Nothing. I am strong when I say, because not like this. Now I am afraid. If the soldier come here, I am afraid.
Yeah.
They kill in the street. They kill the man and the woman. But in the bus, I can't afraid from them.
The soldiers arrested Virginie's husband, but she says she didn't care. They said they'd be back for the cows. And the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that, the soldiers came back in their jeeps to Virginie's house. And every day, she'd tell them to leave and promise them that the cows were for meat, that soon she would butcher all 19 of the cows. In the meantime, Virginie continued to milk the cows for the people of Beit Sahor. She was fearless.
And go to the house. You want milk? You want milk? Yes.
Some nights, the military put Beit Sahor under curfew. They wanted to discourage all Intifada activities, the vegetable picking, milk delivering, the organizing. But even when the town was under curfew, while Israeli soldiers paced the streets with guns to make sure everyone stayed inside, Virginie packed bottles to be distributed to the families of Beit Sahor. In the middle of the night, young boys would sneak from house to house to deliver milk to families.
Give me one, give me 2 liter, give me 3 liter. Yeah, take. How? 1 kilo? Yes, take. 2 kilo, take.
I broke the curfew because I was stupid. I cannot tell why. I thought it's an action that I can do myself.
Dr. Majid Nasser delivered the milk in his car. He says because he was a doctor, he was the only one in Beit Sahor who dared to drive a car during curfew.
Ahali Beit Sahor. People of Beit Sahor, you have now curfew until further notice.
Dr. Majid started stacking milk bottles in his back seat.
Between the seat and where the legs are, I put some blankets on it. Often I met soldiers, often when I drive on the street, and suddenly I can see there's someone waving for me to stop. And I stop, and then immediately soldiers from the left and the right come to the car, and once they tell me to open the window, then immediately the gun was showing inside, and then they were asking me questions. I was afraid, my heart was beating, and maybe my hands were wet. But no, I went, the questions and answers were, my answers were adequate.
The soldiers asked him questions. He gave them answers. He thought the soldiers would pull him out of the car, but then they waved him through. He drove through the hills of Beit Sahor in the silence of a city-wide curfew to deliver milk.
Yeah, I knocked at the door, not very loud. It's curfew. And they opened, and once they saw me, they were astonished to see, because I'm known in the city. And then I said, I have milk for you. And then the surprise went into a big smile. And then, come in, let's have coffee. And every house wanted to have coffee. And it was so difficult to tell them, no, I don't want to have coffee. I had coffee. You cannot have 20 times coffee.
And what did the milk taste like?
It's fresh milk. And once it's boiled, it has a very thick cream on top of it. We usually eat it. It's rich in cholesterol. We just scrap it with the spoon, put it on a plate like this one, add sugar to it, and then...
Dr. Majid was lucky. He never got caught. But the soldiers still wanted those cows. So Virginie says she and her husband had no choice.
And we put it, the sulhabil, rope in the iron here. And
Virginie told me that she and her husband butchered all 19 of those cows.
And the cow, she fell the round
in the floor.
For 1 minute, they come here and kill it.
Did you eat the lahma?
No, I can't eat. They mawladi, yes, like my boy, yes, and friendless. I'm very sad.
Virginie says the cows were like her children as she runs her hand across her throat, motioning a slaughter gesture.
Very sad. Where they go to kill them? No milk.
No. We didn't butcher the cows.
You didn't butcher the cows?
No. What did they tell you?
So Virginie says she killed the cows and sold the meat.
No. Virginie didn't tell you that to us.
Okay, what happened?
Maybe she was afraid of saying that because we are still under occupation, you know. We are still now under occupation, and maybe she didn't trust you enough.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe she didn't trust you enough.
Because they're still under the boot of occupation. And while this is supposed to be a story about fighting back, the fight kind of lost. So the story is still told under the watchful eye of Israeli soldiers. Jalal says Virginie didn't tell me the truth because she didn't know who I was or who I might tell this story to. Even though she wanted me to know how strong she was, how she stood up to the soldiers, she also didn't want to get in trouble. The real truth, Jalal says, is that he and the Agriculture Committee moved the cows away from Virginie's house. He knew the soldiers were harassing Virginie and her family every day.
We felt sorry for them, really. We felt very sorry for them and decided to move the cows to give them some... some peace. to give them a break. The cows went from Virginia to Bethlehem and then to Siham.
So as the cows are being moved from place to place all over Beit Sahor to Bethlehem and back, Beit Sahor, there's hills, what do you think they were thinking?
As any human being, when you kick him from a place to a place to a place, exactly like the Palestinian people, exactly. Kicking them out of, from one place to another place, exactly, they're the same thing. It's sad, really sad.
I went back to Dr. Majid because I was still confused about how this story ended. The real story.
I talked to Salim and he says the cows went from Virginie's to Siham's house. And so I'm still confused about the ending of the story. And
I don't think if you want to go into details of the real story, I don't think you will find conclusive, uniform information.
Why not?
Because of the result. There is a lot of dismay, there is a lot of anger, there is a lot of dissatisfaction, there is a lot of disappointment, both from anger vis-a-vis the Israeli side, disappointment vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority side. So it's very normal that people are hoping for something better than the shit situation like now. That's the natural things of humans, that they're always hopeful. And to see the Israelis running after small children looking for cows, and we dramatize it by saying they were used helicopters and...
Did they actually?
No. They didn't go to the streets and say, have you seen that cow? Mm-hmm. No, that's our fantasy. In case of our cows, it's a real story. Things happened.
Yeah.
Okay, they didn't make a search with the helicopters, but they searched for the cows. They didn't go in the streets saying, have you seen that cow? But they searched for the cows. So the milk was distributed during curfew by me. So it's a real thing happening.
Dr. Majid is right. I ended up interviewing about 10 people and did find out what seems to be the whole story. After the cows were taken from Virginie's house, they went to Bethlehem and then to a woman named Siham. Siham took care of the cows for 3.5 years, until the spirit of the First Intifada was crushed with negotiations, deals. And Beit Sahorians went back to Israeli milk, back to mere dreams of independence.
That with the solar panels, the one after, it's with the red block.
Yeah, yeah. I made my way to Siham's house. She was the last person to care for the cows.
Okay. And then when I exit, I go left.
I knock on Siham's front gate for about 5 minutes until she opens the door.
Hi, sorry to just show up at your house.
We sit on wide couches and Siham offers me tea.
Sit.
Okay.
حلو حلو الشغل معهم يعني كان كنا نشوفه إشي يعني إشي حلو.
She's saying that the work was sweet with the cows. It was sweet because she expected something else to happen. She expected that there would be a country.
إحنا وقفناهن هن وقتها لأنه خلص صفت مخسر يعني صفن أظني 4 or 5 آخر.
To be frank, she says, she and her husband were the ones that decided to end the project. It was that they only had a few cows left. They grew old and stopped being able to produce.
I feel very, very sad, especially for these cows. And they became as a part of our family, and part of our life. It is a sad story, really. Because when we started the whole thing, I had some dreams that this project will succeed and become bigger and bigger. But what shall we do? That's our life.
After all these interviews, I called Virginie over the phone to ask once more what really happened. She told me I had already asked enough questions. Why am I asking the same thing over and over? I sensed that she was upset. It seemed like we were having some sort of communication issues on the phone, so I went back to her house the next morning. When I walked into her kitchen, I smiled, but she didn't smile back. I left my mic in the bag and sat down at her kitchen table. Then I heard her say to her granddaughter in Arabic that she thought I was maybe part of the occupation forces, and something about soldiers. Her granddaughter waved her hands in the air, motioning Virginie to stop talking. I also frantically waved my hands in the air. When Virginie saw that I understood what she said, she was embarrassed. Her granddaughter was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. We all apologized and laughed, And Virginie made coffee and offered me jars of homemade cheese soaked in olive oil.
You take one.
She held my hand for the next hour.
Take your coffee. Welcome for you, for my house. All the time come for my house, not asking. Visit me.
Inshallah.
Meet Ahla wa Sahla.
Still, she wouldn't tell me anything else, except that she and her husband killed every last cow in their backyard.
I tell her, we cut it and cut one to end. We kill all the cow. I'm crying because they're good. They make milk. I'm very sad, very sad.
After the First Intifada, Jalal got a job at the Paradise Hotel in Bethlehem, which he lost when the hotel caught on fire and burned down during a gun battle about 10 years later in the Second Intifada. Siham's husband died of heart problems after the cows left. She says the whole thing really stressed him out. Dr. Majid, he builds wooden furniture in his spare time. And Virginie is still a butcher's wife. She recently opened a clothing store for women near her store of meat. Today there are a handful of Palestinian dairy brands, Al Janaydi and Al Jabrini, just to name a few. Special thanks to Amr Shomali and Paul Cohen. They directed the film The Wanted 18, where we first heard this dairy tale. That original score for that story was done by Leon Morimoto. The story was produced by Shayna Shealy. Snappers. In the middle of the desert, in the middle of northern South Africa, you can come across a puddle of water. And at the bottom of this puddle, there's a slot. And this slot is the entrance to the third largest freshwater cave in all the world. And here is where our adventure begins. If you're the type that has to know what happens next, that needs stories that matter in your life, get the Snap Judgment podcast to go behind the story. To go behind the snap, you got to join the nation. Snap Nation. Get the Snap Judgment Jen Culver Comedy Hour. Download it right now. Snap Judgment's queen of comedy. See never-before-broadcast material. You can laugh yourself silly. Wear the snap pen so the world knows you snap. Exclusive material. Join Snap Nation at snapjudgment.org. Snap was produced by the team that has already arrived to the promised land. Give it up for the Uber producer, Soul Brother number one, Mr. Mark Riskich, King of Rock, Happy City Miller, Anna, Tiny Dancer Sussman, Shayna the Boss Sheely, Queen B, Eliza Smith, Renzo, the King of Country Goryeo, Mr. Big, Leon Morimoto, Nancy, High Priestess Lopez, Liz, Can Do Mac, Adisa, the Beat Slayer, Egan, Teo, Puff Daddy the Cot, and Jasmine, the Barefoot Diva, Aguilera. And even though this is not the news, no way is this news. In fact, you could wake in the dark of night, run out to the barn, terrified that you forgot to do your chores, only to realize there isn't any barn. There are no cows, no chickens, because you now live in a city and you produce a radio show. Even then, you would still not be as far away from the news as this is. But this is WNYC.